In a state already known for school choice, Florida lawmakers vote to expand voucher programs for private schools. And is a compromise on voting rights for former felons a modern-day poll tax? This is the Florida Roundup from WLRN Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville. I'm Melissa Ross. Tom Hudson is off today. Just ahead, a look at the final moves of the state legislature as they wrap up their session in Tallahassee with more money set aside for private school vouchers and controversy over implementing Amendment 4, which restores voting rights to returning citizens. And you can join the conversation, too, at 305-995-1800 on the Florida Roundup with your phone calls and tweets right after this news. Welcome to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is off this week. Well, the Florida House passed a bill Tuesday that would allow more Florida students to use taxpayer-funded vouchers to pay for private school. Now, the measure expands school choice options in a state already at the forefront of the school choice movement. The debate over whether vouchers drain money from traditional public schools played out on the House floor this week with Democrats protesting passage of the bill. Here's State Representative Anna Eskamani.
You can make the point that when you divert public dollars into a private enterprise, you can say you're saving money because you're pulling a student out of that school that doesn't have to be invested anymore. But the reality is that when we make that type of push, we're also losing quality.
Meanwhile, Republicans like State Representative Ralph Masullo support the bill. On Tuesday, he said the voucher program would provide more options for low-income families.
By empowering those less fortunate and being able to sow those seeds of responsibility and hope in those families, to hopefully the next generation will even be more responsible for the education of their children, that'll change our society.
We begin the Florida Roundup this Friday with a look at the expansion of vouchers in Florida. What will this mean for students in the state? How will this change education? Joining us now with more about the end of the legislative session and the expansion of vouchers, we welcome Gary Fineout of Politico and Jeff Solacek, education reporter with the Tampa Bay Times. And your calls, what do you think about this expansion of vouchers for private ed? Call the show from anywhere in the state right now at 305-995-1800. That's 305-995-1800 or tweet us at Florida Roundup. Gary Fineout, let's begin with you. Former Governor Jeb Bush made a rare appearance in the state capitol to watch the passage of this measure some 20 years after he sort of kicked off the school choice and privatization push in Florida. Certainly for Republicans in the chamber and those in support of more money being diverted to vouchers and charters, this was a big victory. Can you talk about how this movement has progressed in Florida and the political significance of this for the majority party, the Republicans?
Well, yes, you're absolutely correct. Governor Bush was here, and in fact, he called this bill that passed and went to the governor, DeSantis, as one of the most substantial educational reform bills that was up in the country this year. And I think in terms of the movement, you know, it's kind of ebbed and flowed and over the years in terms of where it's going. But I think the significance of this is twofold. The first off is that while we had the McKay scholarships, which have been funded out of state revenue and what have you, the idea that you would have a standalone part of the school funding formula dedicated to private school vouchers, and the fact that it actually, the way it's structured is it will continue to grow on a yearly basis. It has sort of automatic escalators on it. That was a big deal. And the fact is that a earlier program set up under Governor Bush had been struck down by the Supreme Court. And now the court has changed. And everyone, I think, is anticipating there will be a court challenge, but that in the end, they will strike down the past prohibition on directly funding vouchers out of the state budget.
That's right. Jeff Solacek of the Tampa Bay Times, you cover education in Florida. Ron DeSantis, as incoming governor, did appoint more conservative justices to the Florida Supreme Court. So this measure is certainly more likely to survive a court challenge. Let me ask you as well, from supporters of traditional public education who've been critical of this movement toward more privatization in Florida, they've vehemently protested the way that more taxpayer dollars are going toward religious-based schools, including those that teach creationism, for example, schools that discriminate against LGBT employees or students, and more. And then also the argument that they see this as a drain on public tax dollars intended to fund public education. This argument that funneling more money toward vouchers is creating a parallel system of education in the state. That has been the outcry from the teachers' unions and supporters of traditional public schools. However, that's not an argument that has won the day in Tallahassee. Your thoughts?
Well, that was the argument that won the day under the old Supreme Court, where they found that the uniformity clause within the state constitution was being violated by the voucher program that existed under Governor Bush. Now, that argument is not holding sway anymore. It doesn't appear. And this is, you're talking about adding more money. This is really the first new voucher program outside of, like Gary said, the McKay Scholarship and the voluntary pre-K program and the Gardner, which are all sort of directed at specific subgroups. This is the first one that really goes to letting anyone under a certain income threshold go into those private schools using state money, as opposed to money that now, mostly under the tax credit scholarship programs, has been money diverted away from tax money before it ever even came in. They were able to donate it. And so we're looking now at really creating another system that's funded by the state. As the governor once said earlier in his tenure, if it's funded with public money, it is public education. And that's kind of where it seems like we're going.
It's 305-995-1800 as we talk about the voucher program that has traditionally been used to fund some private education options for parents in Florida, now called the Family Empowerment Scholarship Program. This will expand state money, if it survives a court challenge, to pay for tens of thousands of students to attend private schools in Florida. Gary Fineout, what about that comment that Jeff mentioned from Governor DeSantis, that if it's public money, it's public education? The argument against that from those who've criticized this drift toward privatization is that often charter schools aren't subject to the same level of oversight as public schools.
You said charter schools. A little bit of different distinction, primarily talking about vouchers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, vouchers go to private schools. And the thing about it is, as you pointed out, that they are not bound by the same regulations. And even one of the big things, of course, is the testing that goes on in the public schools that started under the FCAT is now the Florida Standards Assessment. While there are requirements that the schools that accept vouchers must have some sort of assessment, it's not the same one that the kids in the public schools. So you have a lot of arguments about everything from the type of teachers they have and the way that they're run in terms of them not having the same level of accountability as the public schools. Now, the counter argument from the Republicans is, well, it's up to the parents, and the parents are making the choice. And so that is the case where the parents are making the choice. But I think the thing is that as I've covered this, it's been exasperating, and I'm sure Jeff can share this, is that it's exasperating in covering and explaining it to people, because the fact of the matter is that both sides sort of they smooth over the rough spots in their arguments, the things that don't fit quite into the whole thing. I mean, because the concept is, oh, the dollar follows the child, so it's not that big of a deal. Well, the situation is, you can look at what's happening in Bay County and what's happening in the schools in Panama City. They've had a massive outflow of children, and they lost 5,000 kids. And now that school district is struggling with how they're going to pay their bills and have the teachers on hand. It's not quite the same thing in a public school because, of course, the effect is diffused over a large place. But there are financial impacts. When you have a great deal of children coming out of if they all come out of one particular public school, that school has to recalibrate it. Maybe they have to get rid of teachers. Maybe they have to give up classes. So there is a financial impact that the one side doesn't want to be able to acknowledge. But then the other side has the situation that the whole issue of, they are taxpayers. They are parents. Should they try to be able to get the best education for the child? Should they be forced by virtue of their zip code have to go to a particular school? So part of this is that there's also a political element to it, and that the teachers union backs Democrats, and they have backed Democrats, and that is part of the animus as well. So, unfortunately, what happens is, again, I'm sure Jeff would agree with this, like when you try to get into the depths of education policy, you a lot of times get waylaid by the machinations of both sides.
Sure. Those are great points. Jeff Solacek, too, as Gary pointed out, for parents that want a choice for their child, parents that will take advantage of the voucher program so that they can send their child to a school that they think will do a better job than, say, their neighborhood school. What are you hearing from that group of parents who are saying, look, we like this expansion?
There is a lot of that, and it happens more in some areas than others. I'm here in Hillsborough County where there's just a plethora of choices, and it's sometimes hard to imagine that there aren't magnet schools and there aren't a variety of other public options available to people. And so these charters and vouchers make more sense in some of the other places, and they do want those things. The choice thing goes both ways, though, because you then have parents who say, we choose public schools and we choose to have them be fully funded. And if choice is such a great thing, then why do you not let us choose not to be tested the way that the students on the vouchers in the private schools are not tested? And they get feedback on that. The accountability and the choice arguments sometimes run into, pushback, depending on which side that you're on.
It's the Florida Roundup this Friday with your tweets to @FloridaRoundup as we talk about more taxpayer money going toward vouchers for private education in Florida. What do you think about that? Let's go to some of your calls. It's 305-995-1800. Calls coming into us from all over the state right now. Let's begin with George in Lakeland this Friday. Hey, George. Happy Friday. What do you think about this? Go ahead. Go ahead, George. You're on the air. All right, George, do me a favor.
Clear.
Yeah, go ahead, George.
Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, I think this is a clear erosion of church and state. And wait until the first Muslim Wahhabism-based school starts asking for money. And, and the students will be wearing, the hijabs, their faces covered. Wait until that happens, and our Christian majority legislators are going to have a fit. They're going to say, well, we didn't intend this money to go there. We just want it for Christian schools or Jewish schools. Wait until that happens. It's going to be an unintended consequence. This is a bad idea, and I don't know what they're thinking of in Tallahassee.
All right, Gary Fineout, the issue of parochial schools hasn't really dominated this discussion, but what about George's point as to, where the money will go?
Well, in the current programs, particularly the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program, the great bulk of the money is going to religious schools. They are religious instructions, and there has been a bit of a conversation, and it came up in the legislature. There is a provision in the Florida Constitution that it's called the No Aid provision, and its incarnation is related to what is considered to be anti-Catholic bias that existed at the end of the 19th century. But it is in there. And one of the lower court rulings that dealt with the first voucher program sort of had issue with Governor Bush's first scholarship program because of this. It was the Supreme Court that actually used a different part of the Constitution. But that issue is out there. Now the counter argument is, well, we have all these other programs that where money goes to religious institutions, whether it's the pre-K program or whether it's the fact that we have Bright Futures and other financial aid that goes to colleges that are related to secular institutions. So it is out there, and it was discussed to some extent. I mean, the issue is what's difficult is that whenever you bring that up, the response from the Republicans and the other supporters of these school choice programs is, well, you're relying on something that was rooted in anti-Catholic bias.
Well, Jeff Solacek.
Can I chime in for a minute,
Jeff
please?
Solacek, go ahead.
I was going to say that, first off, the whole issue of the Blaine Amendment and the no aid provision has made it up to the U.S. Supreme Court in other states like Ohio, and has been ruled constitutional that the school that the states were able to provide vouchers to private schools, and that so long as the schools were not providing a religious instruction specifically. And in relation to the caller's point that as soon as a Muslim school starts getting money, that people will be upset. Two of the largest tax credit scholarship schools in the Tampa Bay area that receive that money are, in fact, Muslim schools, and nobody's really said much about it.
So it's already happening. Okay, I'm glad you made that point. Let me ask you as a follow-up, Jeff. The criticism from those opposed to this, that some taxpayer money is going towards schools that teach creationism, for example, or that are regarded as discriminating against LGBT staffers or what have you. These have faced legal challenges in the past in other states, not just Florida. Can you talk a little bit about that aspect of this?
Well, I can tell you that the people are upset about that. And as far as what will happen, though, I mean, I guess it just kind of depends. It's not something that I've known too much about the legal background on, so I'm probably going to let Gary, if he knows anything, I'll defer to him.
You're laughing, Gary.
No, I just thought there was there are people up here in Tallahassee who chide me because they say I play lawyer too much. I mean, you know, the thing about it is that the current program, the Florida Tax Credit Scholarship, it survived legal challenges over the last several years, primarily because of the way it was structured. It was because the argument is that the money never, quote, officially entered the Treasury. And there was a whole lot of courts discussions and rulings where they're like, well, first off, we don't even think you have standing to challenge this because the no aid provision doesn't even come into effect here because, quote, the money never comes into the actual Treasury, which is correct. The way the tax credit scholarship is the groups like Step Up for Students, which is the overwhelming large scholarship funding organization in the state. They basically get donations from various organizations who then get a tax credit from the state. Now, the thing that is different about this program that's been established in the bill that we expect Governor DeSantis will sign into law is that it is out the window. This is actually money that is coming straight out of the Treasury.
Okay.
And so that's the question as to where, if we have a legal challenge, will it center on this no aid provision, and will it be upheld, or will it be struck down?
Will it be struck down? Hold that thought one moment. Let's get one more call on the air before we go to break. It's Chris in Jacksonville. Hi, Chris. Thanks for holding. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi. I just think that it's very interesting that last year we saw a big push towards making schools in Florida safer because we had this watershed moment that's driven change all across the country. We saw all these unfunded mandates come out, and there's all kinds of things that we're trying to do to make the school safer, and then we turn around and do something to draw that funding away. And it just, the arguments just don't really make so much sense, because if I was to hire private security for my house, could I get a voucher to not have to pay the taxes that might go towards police or fire or things like that? You know, like it's part of the public good. And so it's kind of, we need to focus on giving the funding when it's needed and not taking it away instead.
All right, that's Chris in Jacksonville. Lots of tweets coming into the Florida Roundup this Friday, too. Here are just a couple. More money for private charters in Florida is a catastrophe, says one listener. Kai tweets the show, when we have some of the worst public education in the country, don't you think our first priority should go into fixing our education system that is falling apart and paying teachers more instead of spending money on private schools that are majority faith-based? Jeff Solacek, you know, the legislature, they have not heard that argument from Florida voters. This is likely to pass. We want to continue the conversation with you and Gary Fineout and everyone's calls and tweets as we talk about the expansion of the voucher money in Florida going toward some private schools. What do you think about this? The number to join the show is 305-995-1800. From anywhere you are in this state, Miami, Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville, Gainesville, Tallahassee, we are on the air everywhere this noon hour, and we want to hear from you here on the Florida Roundup. We'll be right back. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening this Friday. My co-host Tom Hudson is off this week. And as we continue talking about a measure likely to be signed into law in Tallahassee by the governor about expanding the voucher program for some Florida students, along with Gary Fineout of Politico and Jeff Solacek, who covers education for the Tampa Bay Times, we have lots of calls coming in from all over the state. Let's go to M in Miami. Em, are you a school teacher? Is that right?
Yes, right now I'm on my lunch break, but I wanted to tune in, chime in. I'm a middle school teacher in Miami-Dade County Public School. I've been teaching 25 years, and it is very sad for me to hear what they're planning to do. Every year we are giving goals. I set personal goals as an educator. We're giving standards we have to reach. We have to get our kids to meet these. In the Miami-Dade County, there's not one single school that's an F school. And, you know, we're always trying to, our school, the school that I'm at, the middle school, every year we're trying to get students. And this is a public school. And then within two blocks, there's like three charter schools. You know, how are we supposed to, as public school educators and public school, continue, you know, teaching? And then we have these kids that come from charter schools, private schools, that for whatever reason, their parents decided to put them in public schools, and they're not even at the bar. They're not even at the standard. They're, you know, they need to catch up. So, you know, this is very unfair to public school educators that are out there educated, busting their butt, working for their kids, believe in their kids, and the rug gets keep pulling out from under us. The standards get higher. You know, and if we ask, hey, we're professionals, pay us, we get treated like, really? Are you serious? This is ridiculous. They cannot keep doing this to us.
Em, that's Em, a public school teacher in Miami-Dade. Thank you for calling in on your lunch break from teaching to share your thoughts with us. Okay, Jeff Solacek, covering education for the Tampa Bay Times. This is the argument that we hear from educators in traditional public schools, that they perceive that these other institutions aren't always held to the same standards, that they are draining money and resources away. This is not a new argument. We've heard all of these arguments across the state for a long time, but certainly when you hear teachers talking about this, you know, this is, they're speaking from the heart in terms of being in the school system for many of them for decades. So this is something I know you hear a lot about on your beat as well, right?
Pretty much every time I go to a school board meeting, visit a school, or run into a teacher in Publix, or anything else like that, that there are public school teachers who are very opposed to anything that would demean their profession, to take away from what the public schools do. And there have been reports that show that a lot of kids who go out on these vouchers, I mean, they're tax credit scholarships now, but what could be vouchers in the future, do return within 1 to 2 years. And there have been a lot of questions about whether they are ready to come back and what the teachers have to do to get them ready. And so, yeah, they're very upset. They want to see something completely different done with the money than just putting it towards a voucher program, which they feel like just decimates and privatizes the public education system, which they believe is spelled out for in the state constitution very clearly.
And Gary Fineout, that's the argument advocates of traditional public schools have been making for a long time. They see all of these efforts as a way to commit death by a thousand cuts over time to slowly dismantle public education in Florida. Proponents of school choice and vouchers disagree. They reject that notion completely. But there are certainly two very strong and very opposing narratives that have developed around this issue, whether you see this as a dismantling of public education or not.
Well, yes, absolutely. I think that is a key element of the argument. And I think, but, you know, what is going on also is, I think, you know, there continues to be frustration about teacher salaries and everything that the legislature does up here. I mean, part of the voucher bill has a complete overhaul of a teacher bonus program that was put in a few years ago that basically, I'm assuming Jeff had the same experience I had. We could never get reporters could never get a cogent explanation as to what the impetus for this bonus program was. It was this mix of ACT, SAT scores and whether or not you were an effective teacher, and you got extra money. Now, DeSantis has come in and he said he didn't think it made any sense. I mean, basically saying what a lot of other people said. And they have overhauled that teacher bonus program. And so they put money in the budget this year and they've sent the bill and it will change the way that this bonus program works. And Governor DeSantis did say earlier this week, he says this is just the start. So, you know, they are increasing funding to public education, I think. But the truth is that when you total up all the voucher programs in their totality, you're talking about $1 billion. And now that's money that, quote, doesn't enter the Treasury for the most part. But would that, if that $1 billion was in the hands of legislators, would they put that back into public schools? So there's no doubt that by the virtue of these programs, you are doing this. Now, we can set aside the entire argument about if it's cheaper, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's a lot of conversation about, oh, it actually may save the state money, and I'll save that for another day. But the point is that all these decisions have consequences. All these decisions, if you do one thing and you don't do the other thing, it does have an impact. And that's what I was getting at earlier on. It's sort of the disconnect between the politics of this is that you either got to be this way or that way, and not a recognition of, no, you can have choice programs, but there is an impact, and it will affect public schools in a particular fashion. And how do you plan to mitigate for that? And that's a lot of what gets lost up here.
Let's go to Mike. He's in DeLand right now. Hey, Mike, thanks for holding. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, very briefly. I lived through desegregation. I remember white and colored drinking fountains, fought against it like many others did for years. And I believed when Jeb Bush had this passed back when he was governor, charter schools, it was a disguised way to keep those less advantaged in society, for better word, in their place. I believe that. I sincerely believe that charter schools are nothing more than disguised means of segregation that, in fact, drag down society and the education of our children. Now, I'll leave it at that. I don't have a heck of a lot to add. That's beyond my point. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Here's a tweet from Kathy. Parents, the point they're making is that parents should be able to have choice, but it's without accountability. It's really about destroying a free public education, she tweets. Okay, Jeff Solacek, you know, the argument that Florida is creating a parallel system of education, does that argument have merit?
Depends on who you ask, I guess. I mean, you are creating systems that are run by different people, by different organizations. You have one that will be locally taxpayer operated, one that will be private. And so from that perspective, you do have different types of systems, and then it's just a matter of how they're treated and if one is treated differently than the other. So is that a parallel system, or is it just, we said that it's public education, and so it's where the dollars go. We're funding it. It's public, and we want to provide more options for more people so that they can have choices beyond just the neighborhood school, which may have been failing them for a long time. Give them a way out.
Well, Jeff Solacek, who covers education at the Tampa Bay Times, we really appreciate you sharing your insights on the Florida Roundup with us on this topic of interest to so many parents and students and voters. Thanks, Jeff, for being on the show.
Thank you.
Well, in the legislative session's final days, there's also been a lot of back and forth over a couple of bills that would require some citizens with a prior felony conviction to pay fees before they can head to the polls. Now, this is a group, of course, whose voting rights were restored last November in a statewide referendum called Amendment 4. Republicans argue the fees are part of an ex-felon's sentence. Democrats call the fees a modern-day poll tax to prevent returning citizens from voting. A final vote on this is scheduled for today as we continue with Gary Fineout of Politico on this issue. We're also now welcoming John Kennedy. He's Capitol Bureau reporter for Gatehouse Media. And he joins us on the line from the Capitol building. John, thanks for getting on the horn with us. The vote is happening very soon on this, isn't that right?
Yeah, we're hoping sometime this afternoon that it'll probably come up. It's been a long haul.
Certainly has. It's 305-995-1800 to join the Florida Roundup as we talk about restoring voting rights in the state for people who had a prior felony conviction. Now, Gary Fineout, you're covering this too. Proponents of the amendment, the people that were instrumental in getting it on the ballot, getting it passed, at over 60% of the public say it's self-executing, that it's self-explanatory, that voting rights should be restored to anyone who's completed a sentence and was not a rapist or a murderer, didn't serve time for those offenses. But now what we're seeing happen is some sort of compromise in the Florida Senate that would have people pay fees before casting a ballot, but that a judge could waive those fees or perhaps convert them into community service hours. What are we likely to see as the final piece of legislation on this, do you think?
I think based on what we saw yesterday, that that version is what is going to emerge and head off to the governor. And, you know, it's been a long haul. And, you know, the fact is that there has been, as you pointed out, the proponent said it was self-execution. But there's been a lot of confusion from the very get-through. And you know, one of the, you know, intriguing elements of the bill that they've got up is that it would create a safe harbor for people who registered to vote from January 8th till July 1st. It's as if the state is saying, well, we don't really know if you would have been not eligible under this new law. So if you registered to vote and you thought you were eligible and maybe you're not eligible, we're not going to prosecute you for voter fraud.
Hmm.
I mean, that just kind of tells you the whole depths of how this has, you know, sort of been a very fascinating conversation to observe and listen to. And a lot of it has to do, frankly, with the fact that there's not been a lot of information. I know that at one point in time, the House sponsor, Representative Grant, said he was irrelevant on what the impacts of these changes were. And I know that John and I, as reporters, we're stuck here trying to say, well, there could be 1.4 million people who thought they got their rights restored. But now with these changes, how many are actually going to get their rights restored? And frankly, we don't know. We just don't know.
Yeah, John Kennedy, we don't know the answer to this. This could create potentially an unequal system across the state for the restoration of voting rights, depending on what different judges decide to do and whether people are able to pay fines or fees. It could be as small a fee as a couple hundred dollars to tens of thousands of dollars. That's according to the Fines and Fees Justice Center. They are trying to eliminate these fees in the justice system. Also in Florida, court charges that are unpaid after 90 days are referred to private debt collectors. They add a surcharge. And so for some people who have a felony conviction that want to vote and have tried to register or will try to register, they would simply be unable to pay these fees. So that could have a profound impact on potentially up to thousands of people who would like to cast a ballot. What about the argument that it is a modern-day poll tax? What about that piece of the argument against the fees?
Well, that's been some of the rhetoric that's been thrown out. I mean, it is a payment that people would have to pay. However, you know, I think the part, as Gary was alluding to a moment ago, some of the confusion is that in the argument by the supporters of this ballot amendment last year, that argument was laid out before the state Supreme Court, that people would pay their civil court costs and their fees and restitution. That was that declaration was made. I think, however, the issue that they're dealing with right now is a pretty slippery slope for these legislators, in that the idea that they're going to wind up with fixes to this that apply voting rights unequally from judicial circuit to judicial circuit, depending on how a judge, whether they want to convert their fine to a community service or to something, or to waive it outright. I think under Florida law, they're going to clang into the federal law when it comes to voting protection and, as I mentioned, equal protection. I think this is the subject of a federal lawsuit coming fairly soon.
And we're talking voter rights restoration on the show. It's the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Let's go to Joe in Boynton Beach. Hi, Joe. What do you think about this? Go ahead.
Well, I just think that it's a veiled effort to create roadblocks for these people to restore their voting rights. Nothing was talked about that when we voted for this amendment. And I just think it's a way for the Republicans to put a roadblock for these people.
Thanks, Joe. Gary Fineout, a statement from the League of Women Voters of Florida about this was released yesterday, basically saying that they believe the legislature has earned a reputation of gutting citizen initiatives and wasting taxpayer money defending legislation like this in court. They're calling this citizen obstruction. Going along the lines of what Joe is saying, the other argument is that in order to pay your debt to society, you should pay fines before your rights are fully restored. But what about the federal lawsuit, Gary, that John just mentioned?
Well, and I've been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for that federal lawsuit to have some moment of clarity. I do think it's important to note that that lawsuit was filed against the process in place under Governor Scott for clemency, in which basically it was almost impossible to get clemency and to get your rights restored. And the lawsuit was held up because of the approval of this amendment. And several months ago, the court, the 11th District, 11th Circuit up in Atlanta, they said, okay, state, tell us if this lawsuit is now moot because of the amendment. And both sides kind of filed some stuff, and it was fascinating reading. Basically, the attorney general was still Pam Bondi at that point in time. Her office filed a motion that says, well, we think the people who filed the lawsuit have their rights restored, provided they've paid off restitution and what have you. And so, but that court has not yet ruled on that motion as to whether or not the lawsuit is moot. And so it's kind of been hanging out there. Meanwhile, we've had this whole series of debate here at the legislature. And so I guess the court moves how the court moves, but it's just been kind of interesting but I think it's important to note that lawsuit had to deal with the actual clemency process used by the governor and cabinet, which basically that was the only way you got your rights restored prior to the amendment passing. And what's interesting is while all this has been playing out also is that Governor DeSantis and the cabinet, they've not gone to change the rules.
And we've got to.
So they haven't.
And I've got to ask you to hold that thought, Gary. Gary Fineout of Politico and John Kennedy of Gatehouse, as we talk about the restoration of voting rights here on the Florida Roundup. Should you have to pay a fee after the passage of Amendment 4? Your calls and tweets right after the break. This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is off this week. And we're talking right now about last-minute legislative moves in Tallahassee that would require returning citizens, people with a prior felony conviction, to pay a fee or a fine that they owe the state before they're able to vote. This despite the passage of Amendment 4, which automatically restored voting rights to ex-felons by 60 or more percent of the state citizens who passed this measure into law. As we continue talking about this with Gary Fineout of Politico and John Kennedy of Gatehouse Media and your calls and tweets, lots of calls coming into the show. Here's one from a listener. It seems to me like another layer of intimidating disincentive to keep felons from even attempting to vote. But we've got another view on the line. It's Tim in Havana, Florida. Hi, Tim. Thanks for holding.
Hello.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, the citizenship in general, the right to vote,
is a heavy responsibility and a very valuable right. And I don't see a problem with requiring those that have committed felonies against society to full and truly pay that whole debt to society, whatever form that may take, if it's fees, fines, jail time, community service, whatever it is. I don't see an issue with requiring that to be paid before they can be a fully participating citizen again.
All right, Tim, thanks for that. Thanks for your call. The League of Women Voters, Gary, has answered that argument, which is behind this legislation, by saying that the state should convert the financial obligations, including restitution, to civil judgments and allow returning citizens to vote if they do not have the ability to pay. Those that support this believe that despite the amendment's passage, that people should still pay their debt to society, both in terms of serving the sentence and paying any outstanding fees.
Right. And I think, I mean, the as John alluded to, there was debate about this in front of the state Supreme Court when they first reviewed this. And there was a question given to the lawyer representing the groups that were involved in this. And he basically said, yes, you know, fines and fees and restitution are part of the length of the term of sentence. And that's, I mean, that's what we're arguing about here. We're arguing about what was meant in the constitutional amendment when it was approved by voters. And it basically says they have to complete their sentence, including parole and probation. And it's this whole definition of terms of Senate that this whole thing is kind of, turned around. And as pointed out, you know, there are some people, and this is part of it, there are some people who have been ordered to pay enormous judgments, and they have no capability of paying it. And the argument is, well, should that be a barrier to voting? And that's where we're at here. Now, what I would also say is, while this is all going on, if the legislature had not done this, then you would have had the situation where the Department of State would have been it would have been up to them to sort of try to figure it out. And I don't even know what would have happened there. Mm-hmm. If that was the case, because what people don't understand is the supervisors across the state, if somebody said they had their rights restored, they just assumed that they were right, and they processed them and put them on the voter rolls. And it's going to be up to the Department of State to say, you are eligible, you aren't eligible. And so that's part of what's also going on here with the legislature, is that so the legislature is weighing in and saying, well, we think it should be this.
Let's go to Susan in Ocala. Hi, Susan. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are basically that this is a Republican way of voter suppression. We, the people, more than 60% voted to have voting rights restored. The legislation then took it upon themselves to redefine how that works. And I don't see it as one thing. I see it as apples and oranges. If people have not completed their sentence, that's a different story. But we want them to be able to vote. Just my opinion.
Thanks, Susan. Okay, John Kennedy with Gatehouse Media. Whether you look at this issue of rights restoration for ex-felons, expanding the use of medical marijuana in the state, a range of other issues, preserving lands from development, well, you could go through a whole list of issues. Critics of these moves on Amendment 4 see this as the latest move by the legislature to ignore the will of the voters that have expressed their views on a contentious issue through the ballot amendment process. And, you know, the argument that this amendment is clear and self-executing. And so, what about the frustration you hear in some of the callers' voices that they see the legislature tinkering with the will of the majority, so to speak, on this issue?
Well, there's some of that, indeed. You know, and this Florida legislature has a very bad record in the eyes of many people for standing by the rights of voters when it comes to voter whether it be early voting hours that several years ago they tried to scale back, and then were forced to sort of bring many of those hours back again. It's not a legislature that has a very good view of public access to voting. So that's one issue. But these amendments also sometimes are crafted in a way by the supporters to blunt opposition and to downplay any kind of controversy by way of the medical marijuana issue that, you know, we've kind of agonized over the last couple of years, to bring it to smokable marijuana. That was deliberately left out of the language of the ballot amendment to blunt what could have been some, you know, further controversy about the idea of Floridians approving smokable marijuana. Then advocates that came back to the legislature and say, yes, that's exactly what people wanted. And again, with this rights restoration issue, this measure could have been crafted in a way that, you know, you get your rights back when you are released from prison. It could have been as stark as that, and there is a fairly good record that legislators could have followed to determine whether or not people are, you know, in prison or not in prison. Instead, it got into the vagaries of, you know, that it would prohibit, you know, murderers and sex offenders from getting their rights restored, and also would require that all conditions of a sentence be completed, including parole, any kind of probationary costs, or any kind of other, you know, civil costs as well. So it got complicated by the sponsors as well. I won't let them off the hook when it comes to, you know, how did we get to this controversial element right now.
Thanks for those points. And you're listening to the Florida Roundup this Friday from Florida Public Radio. Lisa is in Clearwater. Hey, Lisa. Thanks for holding you on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I think these additional fees and fines and costs that we put on top of these people who have already been incarcerated, that are coming out with a record, are excessive and usury. So I think the whole conversation needs to be framed around the fact that these fees and fines and costs need to be eliminated in the first place. I don't think that's acceptable.
All right, Lisa, thanks for that. Gary Fineout, using the term usury, you know, the idea of onerous monetary obligations. Earlier in the hour, we talked about some advocacy groups that are calling for the elimination of these types of fees altogether in the U.S. criminal justice system. What about that?
Well, I mean, again, it comes down to definitions. And if we're talking about a fine or a fee that a court imposes as to the cost of the prosecuting the case or things of, you know, actually putting the judicial procedures on versus restitution, then, I mean, because that's also part of it. I mean, I think a lot of even some of the proponents are saying they don't feel that they can extricate restitution from the equation. Because in that instance, is if you stole something or you did something to somebody and you owe them money, you know, should you be required to pay that prior to you getting your rights restored? And I will note that there were some people who proponents of the amendment said no, that they included. It then became the parsing of fines and fees, and then this whole thing, as you kind of alluded to earlier, as to whether it's translated into civil judgments, and then whether or not, you know, and I think some of the earlier proposals, there was concerns because there was like, no matter who put the fine or fee on, would that also count? And I think, again, back to my first part at the very beginning of this, is that part of the problem is we do not have a good grasp on the scope of the problem. And again, so lawmakers are saying that information is irrelevant, but in terms of making a decision, I think everyone could agree if you were able to say, okay, only 10% are affected by this this change. I mean, I'm not saying people still wouldn't oppose it, but at least you'd have an understanding of the grasp.
And we're almost out of time, Gary. Quickly, John Kennedy, we're still waiting on the final vote. We're still waiting on the final outcome of this. Can you sum that up for us in the minute or so we have left?
Well, this afternoon, they're expected to reach an agreement on how to allow people to have their voting rights restored for former felons. The House and Senate, it's likely to come to final action in both chambers this afternoon. So that's kind of where we're at. We'll have a decision maybe by sometime tonight.
Maybe by tonight. And of course, the legislative session doesn't officially end till tomorrow when they finalize the budget, tie up all the loose ends. They drop a handkerchief. There's a whole ritual. Gary and John are very familiar with how that works in Tallahassee. And so with a very busy day, gentlemen, I know you have a lot going on. So we so appreciate you taking some time to educate listeners all over the state about these important issues. Thank you so much. Gary Fineout with Politico and John Kennedy, Gatehouse Media, both covering Tallahassee for us. Guys, we always appreciate your insights. Hope the session, after it's over, you enjoy a little time off. Thanks, guys, for being here with us.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And so much engagement on the show today, both in terms of calls and tweets. So thanks, everybody, for that. That is our show. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Alex Gonzalez and Heather Schatz are producers. Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming and Technical Director. Director of Radio Operations is Peter Mertz. Our theme music by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at AaronLibos.com. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks so much for joining us this Friday. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next Friday at high noon.